Season 4, Episode 15, Tail Lights Last Gleaming. It starts out with Fancy and his wife driving around Queens, and they get pulled over for a broken taillight. And, just a quick mention, while they were in the car, there was a conversation about their niece smoking weed, and they weren't that upset about it.
Yeah, well, doesn't Fancy say something like, oh, your niece is smart, she has a good head on her shoulders.
She'll figure it out.
I took it as, he was really bored with the conversation.
He's like, oh, she's talking again.
I felt like he's like, God, this fucking niece, man. I get it.
His niece, I don't care.
I don't know, I felt like, oh, man, she's just like an artsy-fartsy girl. Leave her the fuck alone.
She's going to stop doing weed. She's going to come out as a lesbian. It'll be fine.
I'll be okay.
So they get pulled over, and while they're pulled over, the cops get on the loudspeaker, tell them to get out of the car, put their hands on top of the vehicle, have their guns drawn on both of them.
And very aggressively, yeah.
Fancy tells them multiple times, I'm on the job, I'm a police lieutenant, let me get my shield. And he's like, okay, pull it out slow. And when he pulls it out and shows it to him, they holster their guns. Well, he's upset. He then says, well, why did you treat us like we robbed a bank? And he said, the taillight's a summonable offense. Fancy's like, fine, you're gonna give me a summons?
But see, that's how racists work. He is quoting something that he is able to quote that won't get him in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's using something that can protect him instead to hide behind his racism.
Would you say he's using a system in place to enact his oppressive behavior?
Yeah.
But doesn't get in trouble for that oppressive behavior because of the way the system is?
I know, and it's great.
Kyle, I don't know where you're getting. I don't know where you're getting these crazy ideas. Blue Lives Matter. So
yeah, I know. Shemansky had to pull him over. You know. And he was sticking his hands in his pockets without him letting him know, It's getting real crazy out there.
Man, this is all we're going to end up talking about, I think. But, because I've been watching some live PD, or as I like to call it, Now Cops.
Oh, did you, were you able to watch that after you got back from Walmart?
Kyle,
or did you fix up the trailer first?
Kyle, I don't want you. Please don't disparage our blue collar audience members. Also, Live PD is on the classy station A&E, Arts and Entertainment, and
what does Live PD fall under? Art or entertainment?
Both.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
Because I watched a bunch of videos or a bunch of live footage of cops dealing with situations where they had to tase people or set dogs on people. And I understand that it's a bigger debate than cops need to show restraint. It is a bigger debate than that. There are people that shouldn't be in the position. And then there are people that use the position well and understand the responsibility and do their absolute best and then take responsibility for their actions. But in this episode, I think it highlights the important point of this guy went way too far. And then when Fancy is like, why did you treat us like this? The guy falls back on the book. So Fancy uses the power he has to do something, and we're going to talk about it, I'm sure, at length. But he takes down their names and their car number, and before he gets back in his car says, are you sure you don't want to give me that summons? And the guy says, have a nice night, and then Fancy peels off.
I felt like everything Fancy did was fine until he did the, are you sure you don't want to give me that summons thing.
Oh, you're talking about this scene right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not talking about the whole thing. We'll talk about the whole thing as we go along. But I felt like during the first scene, Fancy is really good at being professional, being the higher ranking officer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like when the whole summons question was kind of him just being a dick. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he kind of deserves to get to, but at the same time, I don't know, there's no need for it, but I get it. You know what I mean? I get why he's doing it.
After that, we go to the theme song, but not before we mention that Famous Face, Fancy's wife, is played by Tamara Tooney, who is on Law & Order SVU and was in Devil's Advocate.
She's the Activia lady, too.
Activia. Like, anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls. I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the break, Sipowicz is stepping into a diner when it's raining. He goes up to the bar of a diner, and while he's at the bar...
We call that the counter.
Or the counter. You know, the counter of the diner, and he looks over and sees his son, Andy Jr., played by Michael DeLuise, Famous Face. He was in Wayne's World, Encino Man, and Gilmore Girls.
Is he related to Dom DeLuise?
I believe he is Dom DeLuise's son.
Interesting.
And the interesting thing about this scene is Andy Jr. died.
Can you not tell it's a dream sequence?
The first time I
watched it, I knew it was a dream sequence.
They play with the lighting and they do weird shit in it to make you think it might be a dream sequence. But it's also weird, because this show, as far as I remembered, hasn't done anything like this yet.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't do really anything like subconscious.
And,
or like with the conscience, or like in dreams, and like kind of mystical, you know?
Because
this gets real religious real quick.
Yeah, and he asks the guy next to him to switch spots with him. And then he starts talking to him as if, you know, he hasn't seen his son since his son was murdered. And he starts to get offended by comments that his son makes about him not always being there, stuff like that.
Well, his son makes a joke. It's just Andy's, like, in a weird headspace, so he can't recognize the joke.
Andy Jr. says, like, I gotta go, and Sipowicz asks him, like, could you let people know that I meant nothing, like, I didn't mean to hurt anybody that's back there, and Andy Jr.'s like, yeah, I don't really know how it works, and then leaves. And then he talks to the dude sitting next to him who gave up his seat, and that was really weird, because the guy was like, good-looking boy, and then it's like, I shouldn't be here, and the guy's like, well, you should have
talked over me, or talked through me, or something like that.
Then he wakes up to a phone call about some stick-up guys that have been sticking up various places around their precinct, and a guy was shot.
It's very reminiscent of how Andy was killed.
They bring that guy up to the house. A guy named Mr. Glasso, who was robbed with a guy with a tiny gun.
Which is one of my favorite... This is a pretty good scene. I really like this back and forth, because the guy who plays Mr. Glasso is really good.
And he
makes the character funny.
He's very agitated. He's screaming and shouting. He says, like, get out of here with this gun. If you're not going to rob me, or I'm going to beat your skulls in. The guy shoots him in the head, and the bullet doesn't penetrate, which is insane. And
if it's a small enough bullet from a far enough distance, you know what I mean?
He calls them faggot sons of bitches. That's two different episodes in a row where they use the F word.
Hey, it's a different time, bro. Different time, different place.
Different use of the F word. So they let him go home to get some sleep and come in with a sketch artist tomorrow. That guy was played by Larry Brandenburg, who has been in a couple things. I didn't notice anything that I was super into, but he has been in stuff, and he was pretty good. After he leaves, Simone asks, did you have any brothers disappear at one point?
That was a pretty funny comment. He asked Sipowicz that, right?
Oh, do you have any brothers that disappear at birth?
Oh, yeah, you have any long-lost brothers, something like that. Yeah, that was really funny. When he said the F-word line, Sipowicz makes a reaction, and part of me wanted to be like, what are you reacting for, dude? You said it, like, literally 6 days ago.
Sipowicz tries to go to sleep. Yeah, assuming he's trying to sleep to see his son again, thinking that the dreams will come.
Yeah, but doesn't he know the rule? You can't, like, once you wake up, you're not just going to go right back to it?
you won't go right back to it unless you go to sleep immediately after you wake up. Eddie Hazel comes in, who is a detective over in Midtown, and he's played by Tony Todd, who is from Final Destination series.
That's an unfortunate name.
Tony Todd?
Yeah.
He's from the Final Destination series, he's from the Candyman series, and he played Sergeant Crisp in the cinematic classic The Rock.
Oh, that's right. I knew he was in the... He is the Candyman, right?
Yeah, he is the Candyman. He is coming in to compare notes with a robbery that happened in his part of the city at a sports bar.
Yeah, he comes in with some information about a Midtown robbery, right?
Yeah, and...
That's what he's from.
He came up from transit, and now he's above ground, as they say. It seems
like... He's a real go-getter.
It seems like he's a nice guy... And he gives them information on the guy who owns the bar and says that they were betting that night, so they lost a lot more money. Simone gives him the information they have on their bar owner, and he seems like a cool dude. One thing that happens that's weird is he asks about Gina and says, what happened to your PA? And he tells her the story. And for like he seems to go out of his way to be like, she's still a pretty girl, though. Well, it's like, I mean, Simone doesn't need that affirmation.
Yeah, that was really weird.
And then he says, let's one of us catch these jokers and gives him a handshake. Simone tries to call on that other bar owner and doesn't seem to have the right number. So he calls over to Midtown and he does something that's really funny for Simone because he doesn't do stuff like this often. When he calls over to the Midtown station, he goes, hey, Lombardi! Like he does like a bro...
Yeah.
Which is really funny to see Simone do. Lombardi lets him...
Simone's professional, like, most of the time.
And he's also suave. He's a Bruce Wayne type. He's not a, you know, a jockey.
He could have been Batman, now that you mention that.
Yeah, he could have been Batman.
They could have just said he was tan, you know?
Or they could have just said that his parents were mixed race. Well, I mean, if it was not the 90s.
Not in the 90s,
but in the, like...
No way.
Now you might be able to get away with it. So, Simone's talking to Lombardi, and Lombardi says that this new guy, Eddie, is a dick, and no one likes working with him, and he lies to people, and he tries to steal callers. And
he's shocked that he would even offer him a phone number.
And Sipowicz says, do you think this guy just gave you the wrong number on purpose? And someone's like, I don't know. I don't know if he did that. And Sipowicz is like, well, let's go surprise this asshole detective and show him that we found the guy. So they go to meet Bill McGregor, who he's a little skittish because there was gambling at the bar that they don't care about. But it's also, once they get inside his apartment, he is a gun dude.
Yeah.
He has gun shit all over the joint. And you could tell he's definitely a gun dude because he said... He puts a 25 in my face, nickel plate finish. Sipowicz sees that he has a empty holster, and they put together that the guy stole a Colt 1911. This Eddie Hazel guy doesn't know that they stole the gun off this dude.
And that's, I guess that's a big gun? Is it a 45?
Yeah, it's a pretty intense gun, I guess. Some real artillery, as they've said, to Medavoy, I think. When they come back to run it down for Fancy, they get a call that Vince Scatelli, who has been a part of the show for a little while and has recently passed away, the actor that played Vince Scatelli.
Well, that's a bummer.
We got messages from folks on the Twitter letting us know that he was recently deceased.
From what?
From what? I think from old age. Unprofessionally, I didn't actually get that information ready to go, which I should have.
Death, man, it'll get you.
Carmine Caridi. He died May 28th, 2019, at age 85. And he was in The Godfathers and The Money Pit. But he...
He was in The Godfathers?
Yep, he was. Well, the first two, it looks like. Maybe he...
No one gives a fuck about the third one.
Oh, man. They get a report that at a topless bar, there was an attempted robbery, and I think the topless bar was in Midtown, but Vince Scatelli was involved, so the guys roll down there, and Vince Scatelli is being led out on a stretcher for chest pains, and they thought he was shot, but he said, no, I threw some shots, and I think I got one guy in the shoulder, but I went down with chest pains. And Sipowicz said, could just be God saying keep away from these titty bars.
Like, it's just weird to be at a titty bar in the middle of the day, right?
Am I right? You don't have a midday trip to the titty bars? Also, Vince works night tour. So when do you expect him to go to the titty bar, Kyle? If not during the day.
True, but shouldn't he be sleeping?
That's another good question.
Like, when does he sleep?
Does Vince Catelli seem like a dude who doesn't sleep, just rages all day and goes to work at night?
No, he's too old to do that. His body would make him sleep.
Eddie Hazel shows up pissed that they're there because it's Midtown. Simone basically squares up to him, saying, like, you're giving me wrong information, you're being an asshole, we can deal with this later. And Sipowicz tries to extend an olive branch, going, Vince Catelli says he shot one of the guys, so it might be a good idea to check emergency rooms. And Eddie Hazel's like, well, I'll figure that out when I interview Catelli later. And Sipowicz is like, oh, so getting these guys off the street doesn't matter to you, huh? Eddie Hazel just says, oh, you can walk that way. And it's a pretty intense argument, but then it just cuts to titties, because there are just half-naked women next to them while they're talking.
Yeah, oh, 100%, gotta have it.
So it's very...
Because you gotta relieve the tension.
After dealing with the Vince situation, a woman named Teresa comes in, so she has information about who is doing the stick-ups and where they're going. She has a black eye, and she's well pregnant. And...
yeah.
They ask him what's up, and she gives up Carl and Donnie von...
Kirkenstein.
I don't know what it is, but whatever I wrote it terribly. Carl and Donnie. Whatever the fuck their last name is.
Donnie Brasco? Donnie Brasco?
They're going on a bus to Baltimore at 2:30. And they're like, how do you know this? And she says, well, I live with Carl. And his cousin Donnie came by with a gun and said they should start robbing places. One day they came back and one of them was shot and bleeding all over the furniture, and Carl smacked her in the eye and said they were going to Baltimore.
Which, why do you hit her? You know what I mean?
Because they need to show how villainous these dudes are, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
So they go down to the Port Authority, which is in Midtown, and they don't tell what's-his-name that they're going. And they pull a fake missing girl search, where they're like, oh, we're looking on the bus for a missing girl, so they can get behind the guys and then pin them down and bracelet them up.
Do you think that was a little excessive? Because they put a gun to one of the dude's heads.
I don't think so, because they have guns, and they know they're not afraid to use them, and they're idiots.
Fair enough. Okay.
Because if it was a situation where they know for sure the guys don't have guns, I would say it's different, but they know that they have possibly two guns, it's a crowded bus, and they were stupid enough to shoot at guys and miss completely, because they miss everybody at that titty bar, so they aren't very good.
Bad shots. Yeah, no, okay. I get it.
When they are pulling them off the truck, Eddie shows up and says, what the hell are you doing here? And Simone says, yo, Eddie, you taking a trip to Baltimore? The bus is going to be a little bit late. And then they start arguing with them while they're taking the guys in. Eddie seems to be pulling that bullshit, you're making it harder for another guy to get first grade. And then Simone says, no, I got this from a lot of hard work and working with my partners. And you better straighten up or you're going to get nowhere on this job.
Yeah, the whole crack at him in his first grade thing really didn't make any sense, because Simone's been nothing but cool with him. So to go after him like that was weird.
So that investigation is done with. The other investigation, Martinez gets a woman in a wheelchair who got taken for $5,000 in a con game.
Oh, this was so stupid.
Yeah, it's not a very good episode.
Because the thing is like, well, it is a good episode. This is just stupid. Because who is dumb enough to fall for this?
People who are too trusting and gullible.
I know, but it's like, that's what made it so stupid to watch, because it was like,
Like, and Diane gets in a full fucking wheelchair. Like, did you not laugh when she was fucking rolling around in the electric wheelchair?
I laughed. Because the whole story, I mean, it's not super important. If you really want to watch the episode, get Hulu or Amazon. But they get this woman. It's this scam where a woman pretending to be foreign, or maybe is foreign and just horrible person, she shows up with a bag of money. She says she found it. Then another woman comes up as they talk to the person and says, wow, my boss is a lawyer. I can ask if we can keep it. And then says, oh, well, he says we have to put up money for legal inquiries, and then if it turns out it's all good, then we can keep all the money. And then they show one woman taking out money, so hopefully the mark takes out money, and then they leave with her money, and they let her hold the bag, but it's not full of money, it's full of newspaper.
And it's stupid.
It's stupid because the only reason they catch these people is because another woman comes in who's smart, another older woman who's like, so they told me about this thing, and I was like, yeah, no. Once they mentioned me taking out money, I walked away. Martinez says, oh, maybe we can go to the same neighborhood and we can work something up. Do you think you could go in for the sting? And Russell jokingly is like, oh, I can pass for 65. And Martinez goes, no, like in a wheelchair.
I know, but it just, like, reminded me of when fucking George Costanza had a wheelchair. Like, that's all I thought, is, like, her, she was, like, whipping around on this wheelchair. It just looked goofy to me.
And they run a sting, and they have a phone with a recorder. She says cellular phone. She's like, oh, I have a cellular phone. And I was like, oh, God, yeah, that's and right.
And Russell offers up that cell phone so fast, it's kind of suspicious.
Like, yeah, like, these people wouldn't go, you really gave us that cell phone pretty quick.
Why, if you're running a scam, would you borrow someone else's cell phone to put a phone number on?
Mm-hmm.
Because now that you did that, they could bring, like, if it was a real scam right there, they could bring that phone number in and be like, they called this person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can, like, deal with that person and go from there.
Like, maybe it's just me, because when they ran the scam on Diane, the first thought I had was, okay, cool, you found money, and you want to help her? Have fun, guys, and I'd leave. Like, this has nothing to do with me. I was just on the street, and then a woman came up and said, I found this money. If you could figure out how I can keep it, I'll give you some. No, you can just leave. I don't know you. I don't know the situation. You have a good day. The reason I don't think it's a great episode is there's not really a lot of interrogations, which I think is the best part of the show. Like, it was a lot of people coming in and telling them where to look.
I think they tried to replace those interrogations with Fancy instead, you know?
That's right.
In his storyline.
They capture them after that. Russell gives credit to Martinez, to Fancy. Then there's three things that happen in this episode left. And I think we're going to talk about Fancy the most, so we should probably do the other two. Out of nowhere, towards the end of the episode, Abby shows up again, who's...
Yeah, right?
Medavoy's lesbian friend.
She's been gone for a while. But...
She's been gone for a little while. She works up in anti-crime. She's a friend of Greg's, who is a lesbian.
Hey, and Kurt.
Hmm.
Is she a lesbian?
She is a lesbian. I think it's important because this scene where they meet is so strange... Because she says, hey, do you think we can get dinner sometime? And he goes, sure, why? Just some friends getting together? And she's like, well, hopefully that could lead to a special occasion. Or it could result in a special occasion. Now, I'm asking you, what percentage did Medavoy think that was a threesome?
Ooh.
Because Medavoy's mind, it's a dude's mind. And
yeah,
he's also...
He's also a bitch, so I don't know if he would think about, like, a threesome. I don't think he would think of that. I don't see that happening.
Because the way she approaches him is like, hey, can we go get dinner later? Okay, what's the occasion? Just friends getting together that hopefully leads to a special occasion. Okay.
Well, Medavoy hasn't been confident like that since Abundando left, so I don't think he was thinking like that, personally.
Also, Abby is played by Paige Turco, who is April O'Neil from the second of the original Ninja Turtles. Second and third of the original Ninja Turtle movies.
Not the first.
Not the first. That was a different woman. The other thing that happens is the end of the episode has... Well, maybe we should do that in the last one. Fine. So Fancy got pulled over by these guys.
Oh, we still haven't talked about this.
The next day, he asks for them to come in during the day. And tells Gina, if cops show up when I'm not here, tell them to wait in my office. Like, they're
which
fucking...
bad move.
Well, yeah, bad which is which is like he's the principal and they're bad kids. When they enter his office, they ask, oh, I wanted to talk about the incident yesterday, and they play dumb. Like, the incident. And what I wrote is, white guy gives textbook cop answers and sidekick parrots even when he's almost gagged. So... I think
yeah,
what,
but they don't think they've done anything wrong.
No, they don't.
Well, at least Shemansky doesn't. We can only go from the point of view of Shemansky because he's doing most of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But Shemansky doesn't feel like he's done anything wrong.
And his point was, hey, I don't know what the hell's going on out there. We got to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And what happened is, Fancy starts asking him questions like, why did you treat me like that? What was the reasoning? And the guy's like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. We got to protect ourselves out there. I don't know what could happen. So then Fancy turns to the other guy, and he said, do you think it was handled appropriately? And Shemansky tries to talk over him. Fancy gets upset and says, Officer McAllison can't speak for himself.
Yeah, I just think he's being a partner. Like, what a partner's supposed to be, you know? And you know how there's, like, those, like, rules, like, he's your partner, he may say a lot of shit you don't like, but you just kind of let it go?
Yeah, and what he says is, another thing we hear all the time when these cases are brought up, look, cops are getting killed in the streets, we don't know what's going to happen.
Whoa, Kirk, I don't like your tone, bro. Blue Lives Matter, and this isn't a joke.
Well, he says, cops are getting hurt out there. On traffic stops, we gotta protect ourselves. So then, Fancy changes gears and says, well, why did you treat us like that? Is it because we're black? And then Shemansky does reverse hurt and says, I knew you were gonna make this a black thing. What did I say that was racially disparaging to you or your wife? Which
yeah,
is.
What did he say anything?
Which then Fancy says, what is the heart of the issue? When you pulled us over, you didn't see two people, you saw two black people. And then when you found out I was a lieutenant, you treated me like a black boss. Which is the right things to say, even though we both know you little racist. And I think...
Only a Lil?
he's the new rapper, Lil Racist. He's gonna get some face tattoos.
Lil Racist? That's already a rapper. His name's Kid Rock.
That was before they started doing Lil, and then they had Kid.
Kid Racist.
And then Shemansky holds his ground, and Fancy, this is when Fancy kind of crosses the line and says, I think you're a meathead and a half-assed cop. And Shemansky says...
Yeah, that's definitely personal. That's not, like, professional. That, he's definitely let his personal feelings come out, for sure.
And then Shemansky... doing the textbook thing, says, I'm not here to be called names, can I leave now?
Yeah, he turns it all on him.
He says, get out of my sight. Then, Fancy brings in the Chief of D's. And the Chief of D's, this is the cool one, because the one we had before him was racist and an asshole.
Yeah.
Using the N-word and tried to get everybody fired. And he says, I had a situation with a cop named Shemansky. I want you to transfer him.
No, he can't transfer him. He knows the chief of patrol who can transfer him. They're like good friends.
And he says,
Because he asked him for a favor, and the guy goes, you never ask for favors, so this must be a big deal.
Yeah, here's the thing that's awkward. He says to the chief of D's, I want you to move him to, I want him to be moved to a black neighborhood, like Harlem, or...
Brooklyn North, I think, is what he says.
Because he says two different ones. He says Brooklyn North or Harlem.
Uh-huh.
To learn how to
deal with everybody.
Because he said the reason he pulled me out is because he's been working in Queens his whole career, the only black people he's met are the ones he pulls over.
So it depends on the neighborhood in Queens that he's talking about, but...
This is also the 90s.
I know, so it depends on the neighborhood in Queens that he's talking about, but Queens is one of the most, like, diverse areas in the world. There's, like... I think that's what it's known for. It has, like, the most diverse population in the entire, like, United States or in, like, the entire world. Like, more people from different countries live in Queens than they do anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know the exact fact, but that was, like, one of the selling points that St. John's would talk about when I went on, like, you got into the school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were like, not only do you get to go to St. John's, but you live in the Queens area and blah, 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 like all that shit, you know? So depending on where he worked in Queens, it would be interesting that he didn't run into any black people. You know what I mean?
And the chief of D's actually gives him an out before he officially, like, asks for the favor, where he's like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And he said, yep, and, like, gives him the information. Then, later in the episode, Szymanski turns up to his office and says, you're going to turn my life upside down because of this. Which, of course, is laughable, because let's say he got a little too worried and a shot went off. That would turn somebody's life upside down. You're getting transferred to a new position.
Yeah, well, it's also like what's going to be turned upside down? The fact that you have to do your job better?
Or the fact that you have to do your job in another place?
Yeah, and not be a racist?
Well,
what's going to turn your life upside down?
Because I started thinking about, okay... Not to go into my own job, but I've had to do my job in different places. And yeah, I had to work with different people, but all it changed was my drive time.
True.
And sure, being a cop is a different type of job, but isn't the implication of, you gotta turn my life upside down, is that like, okay, so you think you're gonna die by going into that place. You think this is it. You think I've given you a death sentence, because I've told you a different place to work.
Oh, no, I don't think it's a death sentence. I think he looks at it as, like, you're ruining my life because now I have to deal with those people.
And he says two things that are really interesting. He says, too fancy, if only I could say the words I want and you didn't get my best out there in the street. So, does that mean that you want to say horribly racist shit and you wanted to shoot me in the street? What does that mean? You didn't do your best. What does that mean?
Well, I never even thought about that.
Like, the way he said those phrases...
Interesting line.
The way he said those phrases was very much like, if Fancy... Because Fancy keeps his head semi-cool. He does say one really fucked up thing. But he could have... Because he said, speak your mind. And he's like, what, so you can record me? And it's like, you've just admitted that you would say horribly terrible things... And you may have just admitted, oh man, if you had got me on a bad night, I would have had you on the ground, kicking and screaming. When it's like, okay, he still would have been a boss, and you probably would have gotten in a lot more fucking trouble than you are right now. After all that, Szymanski then says, why are you doing this to me? Fancy's response I found kind of chilling, because he said, like you said, pull somebody over out there, no telling who you're dealing with. Was the implication of that saying to be like, yeah, you're right, you might get shot out there. Sucks to be you.
No, I think he was throwing his words back at him by like, this is what you get. Like, you didn't, like, you always say, you don't know what you get when you, who you pull over, like, you, and I don't think you were expecting me to fuck with you. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he was trying to say, like, you're, like, you didn't, like, yeah, you said this in the street to me, like, you know, you never know who you're gonna pull over. Yeah, you don't know who you pulled over, motherfucker. Like, I'm gonna fuck with your life. That's the way I took it.
You pulled over the wrong dude and act like an asshole?
Like what, if it was like HBO, he would have said something like, yeah, you pulled over the wrong N-word. Like, you know what I mean? Because he would want to drive home to him that, like, that's all you think of me. You think of me as the N-word. And you messed with the wrong one. That's what I think they would have wanted to say, or would have said, like, if they could.
But they've said the N-word on the show before.
Yeah, but, like, you can only do that, like, a couple times.
They've reached their N-word limit.
Yeah.
Especially if it's all coming from a white guy. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have a TV show where white guys are just flinging the N-word everywhere. But no, Fancy's whole mission is to, like, basically show him you messed with the wrong person.
Which, that's the big question, and I think the Chief of D's coming back and talking to him is important, because the Chief of D's comes back and says, I don't think this was your finest hour. He said, why? He needs to learn this, and the sensitivity training class isn't going to do anything. Which is clear, because the dude has all the right words. But the Chief of D's...
Well, no, that just means... No, yeah, because the dude probably has been to sensitivity training, so he knows exactly what to say to not get in trouble for it.
And Fancy... This is what's cool, because then the Chief of D's says, hey, man, I understand why you're doing this, because you think this will help him, but also you need to or not help him, but this is what he deserves, and this is how he's going to grow as a cop, I guess. But he also says... There's a whole lot of people that could get affected by this decision that aren't in this room. Do you think a cop who has a problem with black people, who just got screwed over by a black boss, would be a good fit to be thrown into a neighborhood with a large amount of black people in it?
It shouldn't matter. He should just be able to do his job.
In theory, what I think is... the Chief of D's is trying to point out is, hey, if you send him out there and he goes off and shoots somebody who doesn't deserve it, that's on you. That's not going to be on him, because he never would have been in that situation if you didn't put him there by doing this.
Yeah.
So then Fancy says, all right, put him in my department. Transfer him here. So if he does do anything, I have the responsibility in my own house.
Which is also a horrible idea. And as his boss, it's a horrible idea that he even lets him work there, because his boss should be like, no, I'm not going to let a person that you have a conflict with be in the same precinct because you want it that way. Like, that's a stupid decision to make. You shouldn't put them closer together, you know what I mean?
And then awkwardly, the chief says... I think this is a good idea because your nature and your heart, he'll change under working for you. And then Fancy's like, I think we've examined my heart enough, and like kind of gets pissed about it. And it's...
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because like Fancy can't even get any respect as a cop from cops. And he probably didn't get respect growing up from cops because he was black. Now that he is a cop, he can't get it. So he's probably, like, super pissed and he's not thinking correctly.
Because I guess the big question is, did Fancy throw his weight around to make him a better cop or just to screw with him?
And yeah, that's the other thing. That's the other, like, question.
Because he dressed it up like it would help him, but the other cop dressed it up like he didn't have a problem with black people, when it's like, you may not have a problem with black people, but you treat them differently. It's clear. It happened.
Yeah.
So what's
yeah, it's weird.
So what's going on? I went back and forth because I watched the episode twice recently. On each time, I thought differently if he was doing it because he thought it would be better for him, and because he just wanted to fuck with him. And I took that line where he said, "You pull somebody over out there, you don't know what you're getting into." I took that as, "Yeah, I'm sending you to a possible death sentence. It sucks to be you. You shouldn't have been a fucking asshole."
Yeah, I looked at it that way, too. He was also, he was kind of being like, fuck you, you know?
But yeah, it's a dark episode.
That's the big question is, how personal is this? Is he really wanting him to get better, or is he just trying to fuck with him? And I think that's why the captain comes back and tells him it's not his proudest moment. And I think that's when Fancy realizes, like, oh shit, it's not, okay, how can I bet this, you know?
And it was also cool of the Chief of D's to be like, look, man, I'm not telling you that this guy doesn't have a problem with black people. He probably does. And you have every right to be angry. What I am telling you is, this decision affects who this person sees for the rest of his working life, and it could fuck over someone who doesn't have anything to do with this. So it's like, it's crazy.
It's not smart.
The end of the episode is another dream sequence. Sipowicz dreams of Andy Jr. in a bar. The guy from the beginning of the episode that got shot in the head, he's in it. It was really weird because he's in it at the bar.
Oh, I didn't even notice him. That's crazy.
And Sipowicz says, hey, we collared the guys who shot at you. We caught him on the bus. And then he says, monotonely, that's a large vehicle. Because he says, we caught him on the bus. And he goes, that's a large vehicle. And then Sipowicz sees Andy Jr. and walks away from him. I'm wondering, did that guy die?
No, I don't think he died. I think he's just in Sipowicz's dream.
Andy Jr.'s at a booth. Sipowicz tries to talk to him and say, like, oh, I got the family here, you can meet him. Andy Jr. says, you probably shouldn't have brought him to where I was murdered.
Yeah, they, like, beat around the bush for a while, and then they finally, like, are like, oh, this is where I was killed.
Andy looks around the bar, sees the dudes that killed him.
Yeah, because for some reason, like, every time Andy talks to his son, he, like, has a mini panic attack and, like, thinks his son is unhappy or takes something out of context. It's really weird.
It's these two scenes, the two dream scenes, there's probably a lot more going on than I can understand. Because, like, there's a lot of weird shit. He sees the dudes that killed his son. And I looked it up, and they were the same actors that killed Andy Jr. He goes over to him, and he's like, the ball's on you to sit here, and punches both of them, and then they look like they've been shot. And after he hits them, it's like they have, like, the same injuries that, like, when Simone shot them. And then he says things like, shut up, you don't know anything how the world works. And Andy Jr. says, yeah, I was really sheltered being murdered. And when he turns around, his son is shot where his son was shot by the two dudes. And it looks like he's dead. And then Sipowicz sees the guy that was in the bar, or in the diner with them. He's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I gave you my seat in the diner. And he said, we're lifetime companions. And then Andy Jr. says, that's Jesus Christ, Dad.
He says, good job pissing off Jesus Christ, Dad.
And Jesus Christ, this trucker dude, picks up, or helps his son up, and says, talk through me. And
talk through me.
And Sipowicz is like, oh my gosh, can I have another chance? And the Jesus Christ guy goes, what did you just have?
That's a very Jesus-y line, I feel like. I feel like Jesus would have said, like, that would be something that the people who made up the Bible would have wrote.
That's something, okay. The Jesus Christ character takes Theo out of the bar into light. Sipowicz kind of cries, holding himself, and wakes up to go to Theo, check on him, and then the episode ends.
Yeah, so these dream parts are really awkward, because what are they trying to represent? Like, are we supposed to get something out of it?
I don't know for sure.
The only thing I felt I got out of it was that in death as in life, Andy's still, like, kind of ignoring his son.
Well, I thought it was Andy. The dreams were showing Andy that if he can't get control of his, like, anger and his self-consciousness, because the reason he starts fighting with him every time he starts talking to him is because Andy Jr.'s like, well, you weren't always there. And he's like, what is that supposed to mean? And he gets, like, flustered. And then when he sees the guys in the other booth, he gets angry and he leaves his son to go confront them, which is like, it doesn't matter. Like, everyone in this room's already dead. Like, what are you going to go do? He makes that one line where he's like, look, I'm a police officer. That has some commitments on my time. It's like, what is that supposed to mean? Like, you have to go punch dudes that are already dead? Like, I don't understand. And that's the other thing, because he talks to Simone before he has these dreams and says, do you think the dead communicate to us in dreams? And Simone's like, well, I dreamed about my wife, but all it was like me.
No, he talked to him after the first dream, right?
Yeah, after the first dream, yeah. But before the second
one.
Simone's like, I never took any meaning from it. I just thought maybe it's because I was thinking about her. And Sipowicz said, yeah, maybe it's because this stick-up situation is a lot like what happened to him. And then they make a joke about it and play it off. But does that mean we're supposed to take these dreams as, like, just something that Sipowicz is trying to tell himself? Or are we supposed to take these dreams as, like, this is how
the dead communicating.
Yeah, this is how
communicating with us.
So I don't know. Like, that's why it's so confusing. It's like The Shining.
And what does it have to do with Jesus Christ? Because Andy doesn't really
fuck with religion, so why is that involved? Like, there's a lot of things.
If in the dreams, they didn't have that character at all, the point we take from it is, like, different. Because then it's just... Yeah. Then it's Sipowicz just dealing with how his son died, and this is bringing it up, this trauma. But because the Jesus Christ shit's involved, it's like, okay, well then, is this how Jesus is trying to talk to Andy Sipowicz?
Yeah, and then at the end, Jesus keeps telling him, speak through me, or talk through me. And in the beginning, he hits all about that, like, talk through me. So it's like, is Jesus trying to talk through him, or is his son telling him, like, if you want to communicate with me, you need to go find God?
Yeah, it's awkward.
I don't know, it's weird.
Especially since we know that Sipowicz is friends with a gay man, so obviously he can't have any relationship with God. Anyway...
No, so I wrote something down that brings up a point in that. And there's a point in one of the dreams where fucking Sipowicz says, can I kiss you? And his son goes, oh, don't you think the...
Will they throw us out?
Will they throw us out? And that was that like a veiled reference that God doesn't like homosexuals?
Like if they're meeting in heaven?
Yeah, so I thought in the beginning they were meeting in heaven. And then I thought at the end they were meeting in hell. And I also thought that each dream was like a representation of like what he could have. Like where he could end up if he doesn't like check his life. Sipowicz.
Maybe.
Because, you know, the diner was all bright, and it was like...
It was
bright, it was white, lots of people, and it wasn't just, like, bad people or people who had, like, were shot. It was people, just normal, everyday people.
Yeah, maybe.
And then whereas the bar only had a few people, and it was people that Sipowicz only dealt with through, like, bad situations, and they had all been shot with a gun or hurt. Except for Jesus.
Oh, he was just crucified. But he would be all about our
second... Crucified, shot. We still don't know which one hurts more.
We're pretty sure crucifixion's the worst.
We haven't myth-busted that one yet. I don't think crucifixion's gonna be that bad. I mean, Jesus came back from it.
Well, the implication of the story is
Jesus
that
Jesus bounced back.
He didn't...
He bounced back and he was better than ever.
He didn't bounce back from a torn Achilles. He's not Kevin Durant. It's
he bounced back from being crucified, and I would have to say he did his best work after. So
ridiculous.
I mean, like, come on now.
Is there anything else? Like, there's so much to pull from those scenes, and I know that we have more fantastical dream shit ahead, because I know they get into it here and there.
I know. It's weird. It's weird, because, like, the dream stuff comes in and out, like, that's the other thing that's weird about the dream sequences is, like, they're not really consistent enough.
Yeah, they don't do them on the show that much.
It feels like if you're going to do shit like that, it needs to be, like, constant.
And it almost felt like maybe they looked at the contracts and realized, holy shit, we owe Michael DeLuise. Is that who it is? Yeah. We owe Michael DeLuise another episode, but we killed him off. Oh, shit.
Or
well,
maybe they realized they made a mistake and people liked him, and so they had to find ways to bring him back.
But it was weird. It was a weird way to do it.
I get why they, you know, had him die, because, you know, it gives a new arc to Sipowicz's story and all that shit, especially after he, like, was taking his time to, like, work on their relationship and get better and all that shit. Their dynamic together was really cool, and it worked really well, and they got along, and, like, they seemed to act really well off of each other. It was just weird to get rid of him.
It also seemed like we need a reason for Andy to be tripped up by a hurdle.
He just
had another kid.
We need something to happen, so let's fuck with Andy. And it's like, well, why not fuck with Simone?
And it's also, like, the worst way, because... The episode before, he's hugging his son at the birth of his new son. So it's like...
Yeah, that's what's weird, too.
So then the next episode, the next opening scenes, Andy Jr. is dead. So it's like, what...
And he's not just dead, he's like...
Oh, yeah, he was...
Like, doing the right thing.
He and it was right before he would get his cop uniform. We're going to talk about him more, but... who knows? Anything about this episode you wanted to speak on? I'm looking over my notes.
No, no, not really. I mean, it's a good episode, and then it has, like, a topic that is relevant now, still.
Yeah. It will be relevant for quite some time, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
Just so I feel like I've put out the disclaimer, even though I don't think it'll do much, because a fair amount of listeners already think that we're coast elitists on the show.
That's all right.
But
I've been called worse.
I will say, just as a disclaimer, obviously every situation is not black and white. Obviously, there's more to it than cops need to stop shooting people. However, if you don't analyze the problem, it doesn't change. And the approach of...
Kirk, analyze is a science word, and you can't use science when it comes to solving problems, okay?
And I think this...
If God can't solve it, then you know what? It's just going to be what it is.
I think this episode gives a situation that highlights the problem, which is nobody got hurt, but they weren't treated like human beings, which is the problem. It's not people feel like they're in danger, so they act differently. It's these people weren't treated like human beings.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue.
That's the problem. So as we go forward as human beings, let's just be a little more empathetic to others. And that also means that, you know, that the gay comments and stuff like that, they're all joking. We're joking. We're making jokes. We're human beings capable of humor.
I'm not a hickus.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod. Every episode, every other Tuesday, or so we hope. I've been Kirk. The other voice has been Kyle. And watch more NYPD Blue. Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. It is available on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and where you find a podcast. If you could, please take a moment to go to one of those services and leave a rating and review. If you do that, it gets into the algorithm and more people will get a chance to see and possibly hear NYPD Blue Balls, and then go watch NYPD Blue with it. That's what this is really about, getting more people to watch the best show ever. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books, like Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for 99 cents. There's also What Would Sipowicz Do, which was, I think, a little harder to find, but it's still on Amazon. And then there's also True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by a creator and a consultant of the show. To watch the best show ever, all you need is a Hulu account or an Amazon Prime account. The entire series are on those streaming services to watch and enjoy. So get back to binging the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Thank you very much, and keep watching. Peace.